So what do you think it means then if the U.S. is violating all these international labor codes inside their own prisons? What does it mean for the future of labor in the U.S., I guess?
Well, I think it has a number of implications that are very troublesome to me and anyone else who cares about the democratic rights of workers to be able to have a say in their workplaces. I don't remember who said it, might have been Samuel Clemens, who said that you need to look to prisons to see the way that, you know, a society will treat its own members sort of at its lowest moments. And I think that the fact that prison labor is being used for private purposes shows that increasingly employers, private companies that are employers in the United States, they want to be able to have more control over the labor process than politically they were willing to do in the past. So maybe before the 1980s, you know, companies thought that, you know, yeah, having labor unions and higher wages might cut a little bit into our profit margins, but it will maybe create a more productive labor force. It might be able to create a better name for us within the public sphere. It might create more demand for our products, and so that was sort of valued within the business community. But this sort of turn towards prison labor, I think, represents sort of this larger turn in the business community that, you know, we need to control labor more. We have more power now. Workers should be willing to be thankful for the jobs we give them and not sort of demanding that they get better pay or better conditions at their places of work. And so I think that that's sort of the first sort of menacing aspect. The second thing is that the U.S. prides itself in being a promoter of human rights and democracy across the world. We can see this evident in this kind of speeches that Bush gives, particularly, you know, in response to like places like China that are rapidly developing or places in the Middle East that have access to, you know, control to resources that we find very valuable. And the U.S. is going to have a very difficult time sort of defending itself of accusations of protectionism when it's sort of unable to take care of some very basic violations of human rights standards in its own borders. I mean, this is a very wealthy country. You know, we have a lot of resources available. And if we wanted to do something about some of the issues that lead people to go to prison, then we could do it. But we don't seem to care about that so much as we do care about sort of exerting control in our foreign policy in other places. And I think that, you know, the U.S. could possibly use its economic and military power to benefit human rights in some instances, in some very particular instances. But given sort of the way it's not really protecting the rights of workers here, it's going to be very hard for them to make the case that, you know, we should be concerned about the rights of workers in China or the rights of workers in Cambodia or the rights of women in the Middle East. I mean, I think it makes it a very hard case. And right now, under the current administration, it doesn't seem to be much of an issue. But, you know, political coalitions and power might change in the future, and perhaps more inward-looking reflection might occur. I just think that given the way that prison labor, the use of prison labor by private industries and sort of the public acquiescence with all this sort of reflects the way that U.S. use of human rights with its foreign policy is very hypocritical and therefore very troublesome.
What about blowback from other countries? Like if, say, China did catch on to the fact that the U.S. is violating all these labor laws, do you think other countries will, you know, implement any sort of restrictions on the U.S. or?
I mean, I think that the problem is that the U.S. is such a huge market and we have a lot of, we're like one of the biggest economies in the world and, you know, there's a lot of sort of very real material and sort of non-material reasons why you would not want to piss the U.S. off too much. But there's already sort of critiques coming from, I think, Western Europe. I think Western European countries have sort of created fashion identity for themselves as being more socially aware and responsible than the U.S. in many different ways, and they've sort of been the forefront of sort of this labor rights and globalization movement. Not a lot of work has been done looking at how prison labor in the U.S. is violating international labor standards, though. I mean, I think in the research I did, I could find maybe one report by the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions and a couple of committee of expert reports from the International Labor Organization. But academically and policy speaking, there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to it. People don't really know, though, that even though in the early 1990s the U.S. was very critical of China's use of prison labor when it was reviewing China's application for most favored nation status, that there's been this historical relationship between U.S. use of prison labor and Chinese use of prison labor. So I don't remember who it was, but I believe that one of the Supreme Court justices in the 1970s, I believe it might have been Black, he argued that the U.S. should look to China as a model of a way to use its prison population to do good industrial production. And that was one of the arguments being used when debates over the PIE, the Prison Industrial Enhancement Certification Act, was being debated in the late 1970s. And so they're not separate issues. They're very similar. I think that I don't know what other countries have a lot of economic power to engage in trade sanctions, but there's definitely an ability for other countries to sort of make reputational calls on the U.S. An interesting thing is that the GATT, which is the old version of the WTO, had something called Section XXE, in which any state could refuse the imports of another country if they knew products were being made by prison labor. And nobody ever used it against the U.S., even though everybody knew that the U.S. was engaging in exports through prison labor. Hmm. And the U.S. didn't really use that against China either. The U.S. used its own domestic laws. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a reluctance to go to international law because maybe other countries have similar, I don't know, issues of their own. So I think that this whole, I don't know, this intersection of international human rights interests and sort of domestic concerns over crime, particularly just in the recent, I don't know, 25 years, creates a really difficult, I don't know, situation for lawmakers who have different concerns. And so it'll be interesting to see if anything happens with this.
Yeah, it definitely is very interesting. And it sounds like you're doing some groundbreaking work and research.
I don't know about that.
So where are you going with your paper next?
I think right now I'm looking at my paper right now. I would like to do a little bit more research on it. And I was I'm considering submitting it for publication because it's now been reviewed and presented at a couple of different political science conferences, and I've gotten some pretty good feedback about how this is an important issue. There's maybe like two or three scholars total who look at the sort of the way the U.S. acts in relation to international labor standards, and none of them really sort of do it considering forced labor because most people think of the U.S. as not having slavery, mm-hmm. which is that's a very general way to look at prison labor. I'm sorry, the forced labor conventions. But I think the interesting thing about international law is that, and what international lawyers do very creatively, is that if you read the actual text of international law, it's very specific as to what is and is not a violation of these sort of very general norms that we carry out in our head. And so once I went to the original conventions that were that the ILO had and some of the language of the other treaties, it became clear that, you know, forced labor isn't just about slavery, about like kidnapping people and or engaging in human trafficking, which is a problem that other countries have. But, you know, forced labor is about any sort of situation in which the labor isn't given freely by choice and is compulsory, with some exceptions like military service doesn't count, for example. But what's really pernicious, though, about the U.S. In this particular instance, because I know that, you know, the European countries and the U.S. and other developed industrial countries, they have problems with human trafficking, is that forced labor for prisoners is something that's done by the state, as opposed to by, like, you know, non-state actors who the state can't really control. So, I mean, that's kind of scary because the state knows what it's doing, and it knows what sort of obligations it has internationally, legally speaking. It knows what sort of commitments it's made domestically. It knows what kind of foreign policy it makes within sort of the international arena, and yet it still continues to push this for various reasons. I mean, whether it be to placate a domestic constituency, whether it be because it wants to bring economic development to depressed areas, which is a really big problem in the U.S. with sort of this, like, urban, suburban versus rural divide. Like, there's a lot of economically depressed regions in the United States. And it ends up being that, you know, it becomes very circular. Like, those places without a lot of income, you know, end up getting prisons, you know, and they end up producing things in these prisons. And then the people from these areas are more likely to commit crimes that will end up putting them in prison. And then, you know, the transfer of private production to prisons ends up hurting the wages of the lowest educated in our society. I believe that some economists with the International Institute for Economics in Washington, D.C. argued that prison labor, the private use of prison labor, if it was, you know, much expanded much more than it is right now, would depress the wages of those who are high school dropouts by 5%. And, you know, that's the pool from which the majority of prison inmates come from. And, you know, 5% decrease in income when you make very little money is going to be a big deal. And so, I mean, I think that there's some very larger social issues going on here. There's some very interesting work being done in sociology on a very conceptual level on this. And I think that tying it into sort of international labor standards and human rights is sort of, it became an obvious sort of connection for me. But I definitely need to reconsider this a bit, reorganize, edit, and then try to go ahead and submit it for publication, I think.
Well, good luck with all of that.
All right, well, thank you.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot in a list of many things to do. So.
Great. Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure.